Join me in a spirit of prayer. Spirit of life and love, God of many names, help us sense the power, the mystery, and the design of this world. Help us recognize and to know profoundly that we too are one with that power and mystery, an aspect of that design. Draw us together. Inspire us to see anew the incredible life before us. Make us like the child who feels so freely, sees so clearly, and touches so deeply. Open our hearts to the pain we guard within ourselves and to the pain known by the hungry in body and spirit. From the source of our being, we yearn for peace and healing for ourselves and others, for work that challenges and sustains us, for the assurance that we are not alone. Allow the glories that we see in ourselves and in those around us teach us compassion and lift our spirits. Let us hold this moment in silence. So may it be, and amen.
Our ancient reading is by the 13th century Sufi mystic Rumi, entitled Breathing. There is a way of breathing that's a shame and a suffocation, and there's another way of expiring, a love breath that lets you open infinitely. Our modern reading is from Ayurveda teacher and author John Dewyard. When you breathe through the nose, prana, or vital life, which is carried by oxygen, enters the nasal cavity. The air, while in the nose, is prepared for exchange in the lungs, but the prana is set to travel into the brain along the olfactory nerve, which transports a smell or scent from the nasal passage to the appropriate centers of the brain. The first stop for the prana is therefore in the brain, which, when enlivened, can coordinate with any or all parts of the body engaged in physical activity.
I don't think I would be too far off if I said that many Unitarian Universalists are overachievers, that we take life and our responsibilities toward others and our planet pretty seriously. I can also say that we tend to be fairly conscientious people. I dare say there may even be some perfectionists among us. Tell you what, let's see a show of hands of anybody who feels that they fit that description. I thought so. Just a guess. In my opinion, that's a very good thing. I see we UUs as having an outsized impact on the world precisely because we take things seriously and live conscientious lives. But as with most things in life, a positive often has a negative side. Because we work so hard and care so much, I'm beginning to think that we may suffer some negative physical consequences of our positive actions in the world. Last June, I began to notice a loss of range of motion in my shoulders. I went to a masseuse at the time, and she worked me over pretty good. She was able to increase the range a bit, and she said that the problem was common because so many of us lean forward for the activities of daily life, putting pressure on our upper neck and back. In other words, it seemed that I wasn't paying attention to the advice that my mother gave me all my life, as I'm sure yours did too, to stand up straight and put your shoulders back. I felt better after the massage and the shoulder work, but it didn't last. So I went to a physical therapist and I got some exercises. After I started doing the exercises conscientiously, my shoulders went into spasm. Now I couldn't sleep, and many daily activities were very painful. So I went back to the masseuse, and then I went to my primary doctor. Then I went to a different physical therapist, an acupuncturist, a kinesthesiologist, and to another masseuse. What a journey. Then one day, in the middle of the summer, I spoke about my travails to a friend, and she, cautious about giving advice, hesitatingly asked if I had heard of Dr. John Sarno. I said no, but I went home and I looked him up on the internet. I saw that he had some YouTube videos, so I watched a few and shared them with my husband, Rob, who has suffered with chronic pain for many years. What Dr. Sarno had to say was fascinating, and I watched as many, many of his patients testified that he had changed their lives. One testimonial was from radio personality Howard Stern. So you can see that Dr. Sarno has a wide and diverse audience. To give you some context, John Sarno is an MD and professor of rehabilitation medicine at New York University School of Medicine and head of the Institute of Rehabilitation Medicine at New York University Medical Center. Even though he has written several best-selling books, his theories are very controversial in the medical community. The funny part is that as I've been talking with some of you in the congregation about this in recent weeks, it seems that many of you have heard of Dr. Sarno and his work. Was I the only one who hadn't? Where have I been? Without pain, perhaps. A place of privilege, perhaps. I'm recognizing and realizing that pain sends us to places we haven't been before. Here's a quote from Howard Stern about Dr. Sarno's book, The Divided Mind. Dr. Sarno's work is so profound that it will change your entire approach to your health and well-being. I beg anyone, says Stern, who is seeking a solution to pain, to study the amazing and revolutionary approach outlined there. I did, and it changed my life. I never thought I would be quoting Howard Stern from the pulpit. Well, what is this revolutionary approach? Dr. Sarno begins with the essential connection between our emotions and our physical being. This, of course, is not really news. Medical experts, ranging from Dr. Andrew Weil to Deepak Chopra to Herbert Benson and Carolyn Miss, have written and talked about the body and mind connection for years and years. Bill Moyers explored it in depth in his PBS series, Healing in the Mind, back in the 1990s. He even went so far as to explore the idea of chi. And if you want to learn more about chi, you can talk to Judith Rue and look into her covenant group. But Dr. Sarno gives us something a little different. He tells us that there is a very specific mechanism in our body that causes many ailments. He explains why our body makes use of this mechanism, and he provides a prescription that he says will cure our pain. His unified body and mind approach references the work of Sigmund Freud. Freud said that in many cases, before our conscious mind is even aware that we are going to experience powerful emotions, such as anger, fear, anxiety, and grief, they are repressed and hidden in our unconscious. What Dr. Sarno explains is the biological mechanism that keeps the emotions hidden. He says that when our unconscious mind senses that a powerful negative emotion is in danger of coming to the fore, the autonomic nervous system goes into operation. It wants us to save us from consciously experiencing our uncomfortable feelings. So it distracts us with physical pain, which keeps us so busy that we can't give the emotion our conscious attention. Here's an example. Say Jane is a partnered woman who is working a job, raising two children, and taking care of her home. Maybe her marriage has some stress in it. Her partner often works late. Would we be surprised if she were shouldering anger and resentment that she doesn't even realize? That she has powerful emotions hidden below the surface? Then something happens. One afternoon, her boss says that she has to work late. She gets out of work, already late to pick up the kids, totally stressed out, and realizes that she needs to stop for groceries. When she finally gets home with the kids, she lifts a heavy bag of groceries from her car, and her back goes out. Now, Jane is a perfectly healthy and fit 45-year-old woman, but her back is in intense spasm. Doctors can't find anything structurally wrong, but her back is a mess. She's afraid to get strenuous exercise or to do the things that she enjoys in life. According to Dr. Sarno, Jane has a lot of buried anger, more than she could handle, and it was about to erupt. Her subconscious mind cleverly decided to use back pain as a distraction. He says there are many possible reasons why her subconscious might have wanted to protect Jane from her own feelings. These could include childhood learning, risk to her marital relationship, or societal expectations. Even worse, she may have experienced a childhood trauma or abuse that blocked her from access to her emotions, and maybe she needs some extra help with that. Dr. Sarno believes that Jane's subconscious mind, without her knowledge, signaled her autonomic nervous system, the system that controls our internal organs and their function, to provide a powerful distraction from her boiling emotions. Dr. Sarno says that at times like these, a very simple mechanism kicks in. Jane's subconscious cuts the blood flow to a group of muscles in her back. Not enough to damage the muscle, just enough to make two things happen. Without normal blood flow, toxins begin to accumulate. At the same time, the muscle doesn't receive the oxygen it needs to fully function. The result is a strong cramp or a painful spasm in the muscle. There's no real injury. Certainly not a serious or permanent one. Yet Jane is in so much pain that it completely distracts her from any awareness of her hidden feelings. Wow. Physical pain, even excruciating back pain, is not as hurtful or scary as experiencing our anger, our fear, or our anxiety. Can this be true? And can simply learning about the role of the subconscious, as Dr. Sarno says, and then directly confronting our emotions, truly be a cure? Let me be clear here. I'm not for a moment suggesting, as some New Age medicine often implies, that our pain and our disease is our fault. At every turn, Dr. Sarno urges his readers to go to their doctor to make sure that they can find a cause and certainly, if possible, the cure. I'm simply offering this theory as an exploration because it might open us to unknown possibilities. Even if it does not provide a cure, perhaps it can offer some relief. And Dr. Sarno isn't selling us anything. He is saying things as present and available to us as consciousness and breath can soothe our ills. Okay, I admit it. My Western mind is skeptical. Can we trust this? I want more than individual anecdotes. I want scientific studies, double-blind clinical trials that can establish this as more than just an interesting story. After all, modern medicine deals with measurable, tangible aspects of the body, not with things that we can't measure, such as emotions and the subconscious mind. But how did it get that way? According to Dr. Candace Pert, professor at Georgetown University Medical Center, there's a good reason that psychological contributions to physical health and disease are viewed with suspicion. She explains that scientists have been officially forbidden to tread in such matters since the 17th century. She writes, it was then that René Descartes, the philosopher and founding father of modern medicine, was forced to make a turf deal with the Pope in order to get the human bodies he needed for dissection. Descartes agreed he wouldn't have anything to do with the soul, the mind, or the emotions, those aspects of human experience under the virtual exclusive jurisdiction of the Church at the time, if he could claim the physical realm as his own. So we have been subject to that approach ever since, more than 350 years. Dr. Pert and increasingly other doctors refuse to accept the separation between physical and non-physical realms. Dr. Pert is a pioneer who is actually studying the way our thoughts and beliefs affect our physical body on the molecular level. She reports finding that chemicals inside our bodies form a dynamic information network that directly links mind and body, that in fact the physical and the non-physical are one. But there's more. Three-dimensional brain imaging technology is now showing that there is scientific evidence for the emotional, non-physical aspects to our lives. Studies using this technology have shown that looking at a pleasing view reduces pain and stress and releases endorphins. One study of hospital patients showed that those who had views of nature out their hospital windows took half the painkillers and were released a day earlier than those who looked out upon a brick wall. It's documented that one-third of the U.S. population is in extreme stress. Again, anybody part of that 33%? Medical studies show that this level of stress over long periods of time causes inflammation that in turn can be very dangerous to our bodies. And yet, we are discovering that beauty reduces stress and boosts the immune system. In other words, beauty produces positive feelings and helps us resist disease. Scientists are also telling us that belief in our own healing can have powerful effects. For example, they say that as much as 30 to 50% of any biological cure can be as a result of our brain's own healing mechanism. And we can go back to the roots of medicine, back to the Greeks who told patients that positive thoughts could change and a change in attitude would heal their souls, or to the women healers and herbalists of even earlier ages who knew the power of the mind to heal the body. To me, learning about the depth and power of the connection between mind and body has been astonishing. And yet it raises questions. How do we take advantage of this emerging store of knowledge? Growing up, I was not encouraged to express negative emotions, though I believe that the children of today are being taught to express theirs a little better. But maybe your experience was similar to mine. And that is the difficulty. If we have little experience expressing our anger, fear, and anxiety, we might be afraid of doing or saying the wrong thing. If we ourselves are afraid of our own feelings, how can we possibly bring them forth in appropriate ways and express them to others? Psychotherapist Harriet Lerner offers some very good advice that in many cases goes against a lifetime of learning and habit. She suggests that we express ourselves and use I statements. In other words, that we speak for ourselves and from our own experience, that we share our needs clearly and calmly, that if we have an issue with someone, that we speak directly to that person, while staying in intimate relationship, rather than simply avoiding, distancing, or withdrawing from them. She advises against gossiping and triangulating. In other words, against complaining about that person to someone else. Of course, this isn't easy, and it gets harder because as a person adopts this new communication style, others will go to great lengths to reinstate the old patterns. But I think it's worth a try. Good communication, authentic communication, grows the bonds between us. It reveals the fact that we are not alone, and enhances the chance for love to grow between us. What I've found is that the pain has directed me back to spiritual work that I had been neglecting. Spiritual practice has revealed anger and sadness that I had denied and allowed me to face, little by little, and find some freedom. No, I haven't found immediate and profound relief from Dr. Sarno's advice, not yet, but I'm happy to report that my husband Rob has been virtually transformed. His pain is nearly gone, and he is playing basketball, something he hasn't done for nearly 20 years. One important lesson I've learned during this journey may sound pretty basic, but it turns out that breathing is really important. It is often said that breath is the thing that connects the body and the spirit. It's fascinating, really, how simple things like breathing, beauty, music can so profoundly affect our lives. We're constantly striving for things that seem just beyond our fingertips, when what is so present goes unnoticed. The things that can satisfy and heal, bring happiness and fulfillment, are not afar off, available only to others. They are here with us now. Beauty, wonder, and connection with the power at the core of the universe also give our immune system the best chance it has to do its job. All of these things play an important role in healing. For me, I have found a modicum of relief. I haven't been cured, but I do feel grateful for this journey, and I think I'm on my way to being healed. I'm attending to my spirit, to my breathing, to my emotions, and when I build up enough courage, I'll attend to those thorny personal familial communication issues. So I continue to do the spiritual work, and the work puts me in touch with the fact that I am not only connected to the source and energy of the universe, I am, as are we all, part and parcel of that creative force. Let us open ourselves to that amazing resource that resides within us. Let us draw from the wellsprings and fill ourselves with gratitude and compassion for our own bodies and for each other. Let us become aware of and present to our anger, our grief, our fears, and our worries, and then to dance and drum, sit and breathe with them so that we may be healed and be healers. As we extinguish our chalice, our worship has ended. Let our service begin.